Okay. It is 9 a.m. Thursday, May 5th, 2016. Josephine County Board of Commissioners hosting the County Administration Workshop with Commissioner Hare and myself in attendance. We have our first item of business, legal counsel.
Good morning, Commissioners. And so what we're presenting to you today is some documentation, pardon me, about the real property auction that is intended to be held on June 10, 2016. And June 16th, so this is going to need to be adjusted. Thank you, June 16, 2016.
It wasn't going anywhere, actually. This is right.
So, if there are any questions, I'm happy to field them. We can review the documentation.
Everything is tied together, and there's not going to be any big hiccups between now and June 17th or whatever it is. 16th.
I don't anticipate any.
I think we need to start from the beginning. So the reason for admin meetings are to kind of spell out the process. We discussed this yesterday in executive session. It's really important that the public understands what we're trying to do here, something we haven't done for a long time, which is take foreclosed properties, and usually we have to go through a process of designating them either for parks or forestry, as the state law allows. Otherwise, foreclosed properties that go to auction, the funds or the revenue is distributed to the other taxing districts that normally would have received the tax benefit of those pieces of property being a private tax roll. And as Josephine County's tax rate is the 10th lowest out of the 13 in the county that we have, we have a tendency to not do that, and we usually take advantage of the state statutes to designate forestry or park. In this case, all of the properties that we're looking to sell, some around 15 properties, no more than that, are all previously designated as park properties. And that doesn't mean we're going to build a park. It means that the revenue from the proceeds from these sales has to go to the Parks Department for basically capital-type investments in the operations of the park. And so this is the park is a worthy cause. Certainly could use some assistance in this way. I don't know when the last time we had a sale like this, but it was quite a long time ago. So this is one step in a series of many in order to get it to this place. I want to commend legal counsel, and specifically Pat and Mike Watson, and a whole team of people who have worked together to make this happen so far. It's not an easy process. And these properties actually have already previously been designated and have gone to sale and were not purchased for whatever reason. And so the board is making a determination today of a minimum bid price, setting the real market value, and all agreeing to the real market value, not setting it, but as recommended by our assessor's office. But Mike was unable to be here because he's attending a conference. Connie is not available. And we've got Ms. Arshi, who's been integral in this process as well. A whole host of players, Brad, our public health department, and others. So there'll be an administrative element when these properties are sold after they've gone to auction. If a minimum bid isn't reached, the county can enter into an agreement with anybody who comes forward and makes an offer if we agree to it. Actually can do that now, and a number of the neighboring property owners are going to be notified following maybe even today or next week.
Well, next week.
Yeah.
Formal board action will come next week, so great. That's when things will get kicked off.
Yeah, so that's when it starts the process. So I think covered almost.
I think that covered. That was very eloquent.
Okay. So yeah. It's not complicated. The next round, our hope is to have two of these kinds of sales in more of a routine. Twice a year, so one in September-ish and one in June. One of the reasons it needs to be done by that date proposed is June 16th is if we are interested in having these on the tax rolls, we have to meet that deadline of end of June for it to be included in the exchange of the roll by the assessor and the treasurer and tax collector. So I think that's the timeliness of this. We have to published in a local newspaper 4 consecutive weeks leading up to the sale. All of the stuff, there's going to be a website developed and published that explains all the process. There's at the sale, if we determine on Wednesday that that it's 20, we're recommending 20% be the down payment. The sales on the 16th, the full payment amount would be due at 3 p.m. To the county on June 20th, a Monday. It looks like a lighter color up there. That's not a holiday, right?
No, that's that a summer. Problem. Summer begins.
Oh, okay. That's okay. Holiday. Kind of a holiday, but
it's the day after Father's Day.
We will. The offices will be open. I think we chose 3 o'clock so that we're not bumping up against any kind of a deadline. The checks or cash or money order is brought to the treasurer's office for collection. If in the event that the total bid price is not arrived at, the purchaser forfeits that 20%
yes.
down. Those are the rules. So it's really big incentive to make sure you kind of can afford what you're bidding on when you bid. That's pretty key. Like any auction, that's not good to bid on something if you can't afford it. So I'm sure there's more. That's pretty much the major parts.
Yeah.
We're crossing every T and dotting every I, and you guys have been great with making sure all this is going smoothly. But it's not easy. People say, you know, campaign rhetoric and whatever. Why don't you just sell? Not that easy.
It isn't.
It is far from that easy. So just really appreciate all the hard work.
And we can arrange, if you'd like, for Mike or somebody to come up and give a formal kind of discussion of that next week as well at the business session board. So,
yeah, I think somebody should be there to
okay.
present this or answer questions that,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
Maybe I don't remember. Yesterday we had, you know, determining minimum bid price. It can get a little confusing, but that isn't something necessarily the public is involved with. It's just the rate is been determined, that's the minimum bid, and we move forward. So, do you have any questions?
I was back on the reminding what we were talking about and asking were there any hiccups in this process to get on this. Everything is set up to proceed smoothly.
Yes, by all
indications. And the proceeding smoothly means all these other things that Commissioner Hare included in there, the advertising, the all that other kind of stuff, and
yes.
who is. Yeah, okay, that's all. There's no big messes that way to it.
I think the timeline is we're right on it.
Okay.
On schedule.
Okay. The you mentioned, Commissioner Hare, you mentioned the money goes to parks for capital projects. Is that mandated in the, is that part of the obligation goes to capital
yep.
projects?
Yep. There's language that alludes to the idea that it needs to go to the capital operations.
And maintenance.
And maintenance.
Well, I guess, yeah, maybe it's just when you said it's relegated to only capital projects in parks, that was wider than that.
Yeah, it was pretty specific, capital maintenance.
Okay, well, maintenance wasn't mentioned, so it was just, I'm saying that you mentioned just capital projects.
I said generally. I also used that word very specifically because if you want the specific statute, we can provide that for you. I am not doing that.
I was just asking for a minimum of clarification. That's all I was asking for, not a rehearsal of what was said. So this is all set. I mean, I'm just, because this is such a long-awaited project,
yes.
and there's been so much effort put into it by the whole host of different folks, players in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I want to see some fly in the ointment at the last minute. Oh, we forgot to do the blue paper instead of the green paper or something. If none of that is set to occur or that we are aware of, this is all
I have no
actually going to take place.
We've gone through it a number of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before.
Really?
So
yeah.
I don't think anybody ever
yeah.
intends the fly in the ointment to happen.
Right.
We do everything we can to make that not a possibility. There's nothing that requires us to move any property forward on the day,
yes,
June 15th, we can pull any one of those properties and say, you know what, it's just not ready yet, or there's something. We started out with a list. Well, really, there was probably 100, 150 properties. We got down to 15. Next round, we'll be addressing ones that are those challenging ones. There is a fly we know of in the ointment, and we're working on those right now. Hopefully, you know, we get another list of 15 or 20. But I don't want to say that this is perfect, because we're not done with it yet. Something could happen.
Yes.
But there's nothing really, you know, that we, at any point, that we can't say, we're going to step back from that and pull a property. I think the whole process has been pretty diligently laid out. It's pretty specific. All counties do this. We just haven't done it in a long time. And it's in conjunction with the sheriff's office. We've got the location kind of figured out. All of the players who need to be there on that particular day. I don't know if you had a specific question, but otherwise, we've got I think every team member trying to be as diligent as possible. The thing Connie would say is that, or Eve as well, we're providing a quick claim deed, which is the lowest level of responsibility as far as what we could be responsible for to say, oh, well, you didn't do this. Well, you know what? We're not claiming that we should have. We had Brad go out and planning also, and they all checked off and said they're good to go. And are we required to do that? No, we're actually not. But we, as a county, trying to do our due diligence and another, you know, keeping the fly out of the ointment, we did it. Brad checked off. And
Okay, good. So the next step will be on our week of business session, and then we'll go to the sale.
Yes. Yes.
That'd be nice.
Something that's different that might be important to note, and I'm sure we will, the sheriff sales that happen with the evidence or what have you.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Foreclosure.
Well,
where I'm going is that I don't believe there's a restriction on employees or family members from bidding on these things.
Oh, okay.
There isn't any. I asked that question before, and it needs to be clearly defined.
Yes, I can research that.
On who can't bid on these. But what I've understood from our previous conversations is there is no restriction on this. This isn't like the evidence stuff where employees can't bid. Family members can't bid. You know what I mean? This one's not restricted as far as I know.
I don't remember that question coming in.
I've asked it.
Okay.
We'll
get you an answer.
Yep. Yeah. That's an important question.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Who, if anybody, is restricted from bidding on this? So.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Anything else? Thank you very kindly.
Certainly.
For being part of that team march forward on this thing. And it truly has been a team effort. And appreciate Commissioner Hare setting it up too. So.
Okay.
Thank you
much.
Okay. I think the last thing that I didn't say, you guys are good.
Okay.
All of these properties have potential liability to the county. We've had them for a while. Some of them we've been maintaining, like mowing lawns or having to remove a trailer or something. And that's one of the, you know, incentives. Why is the county doing this? Well, revenue for parks is one. Removing liability is another. We get calls on these properties that are nuisances or potential for neighbors, and let's just get rid of them and put them back in the private sector and having them contribute to the tax rolls.
The maintenance costs.
Yeah.
Does that go under the administrative?
Yes, ma'am. Do the big asterisk by it. With a smiley. Mrs. Schreeder, welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
You have a few items before us.
I have several documents I have requests for signatures on, most of them being easements to grant us access into various properties for timber management purposes. and then a couple other documents, a logging contract, or a sale contract, and a BLM right-of-way agreement. The first one on the list is a grant of easement to the county by Robert Stumbo and Donna M. Mitchell. That is to access one of our current sales that were just sold last month called Colby. That is a permanent grant of easement across their property.
Great. And as I was reading through this, I saw permanent. I said, okay, that's good. But then there seemed to be somewhere in a... apologize because the one I highlighted did not save. So anyway, there seemed to be, there was a sunset on that period of time.
There's two different easements here. The one is a temporary easement and one is a permanent easement.
Okay, but this one is a permanent easement.
Correct. The first one is a permanent easement. The second one on the list is a temporary easement with the same folks for temporary use of an existing road that accesses their property to their residence. We'll be using that during this particular timber harvest. Mm-hmm. And the permanent easement is for a piece that we will actually have to construct a road through their property to access our 40, and we'll keep permanent easement on that little stretch to access our property in the future.
And then how is value arrived at? $9,000. How was that arrived at?
It was my understanding that Mr. Harris, my predecessor, had worked on a previous easement on another piece of land, and there was some grant money available for that. That easement fell through, and Mr. Harris went to these folks and offered them the grant money, and then the grant sunsetted, so the offer had been made. And it's a commitment of that offer.
That's a good point. And I've been thinking about this for a little while. One of the reasons we didn't get the grant funds is because this agreement has taken so long. I think the time frame is approaching 2 years. And so that's not necessarily our fault, because I think we were at the table 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's my understanding that it was a mutual delay. Mm-hmm. I think the Stumbos were somewhat reluctant. I think that part of the time period associated with the original grant money that was available had sunset or expired some of that time, and then the offer was made to Stumbos, and by the time it had taken care of, that grant money had sunsetted, but the offer had been made.
And I mean, in your professional opinion, you know the lay of the land, you know all that kind of stuff. I'm just asking the question. This is a fair price?
This is probably a little spendy, but it's kind of a price that includes the temporary easement to use their existing driveway along with the permanent easement that we'll retain in the future. Access to your properties is real important if you intend to manage them, so it may be a little excessive, and I can't vouch for how it was derived other than what I was told from Mr. Harris, and that was the foundation, that there was $10,000 total available in grant money. $1,000 of that was offered to the Yows, who are relatives of Stumbos, and $9,000 to the Stumbos from that original grant money to get this access.
Okay. I mean, I like the idea of the permanency access. I mean, that's a key there. Huh? So
yes.
It's temporary or sunset. Then, what's this? It's a whole repeat performance again. So. Okay. Any questions on any
of these? No, I think we've, you know, when you're looking for access and the way this piece of property sits, you really don't have much of a choice. This is kind of you're going to spend a lot more trying to go a different route. And that's kind of why it is what it is. Mm-hmm. So luckily we don't have a lot of these pieces of property without already existing access or access through federal. And then a lot of those you'll see are reciprocal rights-of-way agreements. So they work both ways, and those ones are not costly.
Mm-hmm.
So
Okay, and this takes 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on our agenda, down to the grant agreement with Milford Carl.
Yes.
That's all part of the same process?
Yes, sir. They're all for easements. The number 5 is a permanent easement as well. Kind of a unique case where a driveway was built, which appears to be right on the property corner. We have no idea if that corner was established or not, but it's gone now. But it's our best estimate that it's right in the middle. So Carlson's are granting us rights to use that road. They're granting us rights to use the road. We're granting them rights to use the road so that there's no confusion in the future. And that line and corner will also be surveyed under our timber sale contract. That's part of the purchaser credit associated with our timber sale contract.
Okay.
Offset of constructing two roads.
Yes. Use what's there is
can't
always.
Agree, and there's two parallel roads right down the
corner. Yes. So that's basically to clean up an access issue and make it all legal on that particular one. The BLM right-of-way permit, that is a current permit that we have with the BLM. This is just an amendment to it to add roads into it on the BLM side for us to use and access our timber sales. And then the timber sale contract is actually the 9th sale that we sold last month. Mr. Lyles was able to get that back to me in an expedited fashion, so I wanted to kind of include it with this bunch of material, and I'll have the remaining timber sales coming in the near future as soon as I get those back from the purchasers.
Did you say timber sales? Yeah. Okay. I thank you for getting it all done, and especially the involvement of the different characters and players and that kind of stuff. So it's seeing it make it a good amicable end is a good thing, I think. So.
Thank you. Any other questions for me?
No, this seems fairly routine.
Yeah.
How to replace them?
I'm not sure yet.
Well, that would be how to replace them. You mean on admin, or is that what you're talking about?
Or consent.
Well, they're all new contracts. Well, I mean, especially number 6 is a new contract, Craig Lyles.
I can see that being consistent with the other contracts as an administrative item because there's a financial thing, and then maybe the easement where there's a financial agreement, but I don't know. The financial agreements that are consent.
And then my intentions were that the permanent easement would be recorded, the temporary one sunset, so I didn't see any reason to record those documents.
Yeah. Okay.
Consent calendar items are things that don't affect, that aren't unbudgeted or change policy.
Well, I mean, we're just wrestling with this one, the admin calendar or the consent calendar.
I can speak to it regardless.
I mean, it is a contract. 1 through 5 is a contract. 6 is a contract. 7 would be agreement, a continuing agreement. I think 7 could go on consent. 1 through 6 would be on the, could be lumped together. 1 through 5 could be lumped, and then 6 is also, but as a separate, that would be on admin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that'll work, and then you don't really have to be there because she's going to do all that.
Good.
Talk lifting for you.
Perfect.
Thank you very much, Dave. Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have something here. It's the ODF administrative cost for biennium. I just wanted to take advantage of this opportunity that you're before the board and draw attention to this breakdown of administrative costs per biennium that I think is a reflection of. So we got this letter from Coos County talking about the increase in the cost of ODF fire protection, and it's based on our admin costs going up.
Yeah, so associated with the cost yearly is your local fire protection district, and then there's also tacked on a Salem charge onto that, and that Salem charge has been growing exponentially, and it's kind of addressed in that email. I've been having conversations with the Coos County Forester because Coos County chose to pay their forest protection dues minus the Salem charge and asked Salem for a clarification on the grounds for charging the county for those charges or the fire protection district for those charges. There was a response, I think I included that in the email to you, from the state to the county, and it appears that the state does have the ability to do it. However, the forest protection districts have no say or oversight over that budgeted amount. They do over the district costs, but not over the Salem costs that are being passed on to the districts. I think that's a problem. Especially if those costs are being passed on to the districts. Mm-hmm. The districts should have either an individual from the district or an individual that represents all the districts involved with that.
Yeah.
The other problem, you know, obviously that hurts with not helping to control those costs. Mm-hmm. The other issue is private forest landowners get the benefit of the general fund to pay 50% of their assessment dollars for forest protection. Public entities do not. So we are hit with 100% of our share of those costs, and that's why ours tend to be much higher than a private landowner like a Perpetua, Plum Creek, Indian Hill. I guess... So we eat a lot more of that administrative costs out of Salem than a private landowner might. I think in this next budget year, the cost of the district is in the neighborhood of $370,000 to the fire protection district in the road forest protection district. They get split up through the individual taxpayers and, of course, the public entities, which were responsible for a portion of that. I know in the past during my participation on the Forest Protection Board that Jackson County had indicated they were possibly considering charging the state for collecting property tax monies that were then reimbursed back to ODF.
We don't have the authority to do that. It's Senate Bill 3213.
It's something like it is a Senate bill.
Yeah, it was proposed in 2009, reintroduced in 2012, which would give the authority to the county to assess all taxing districts or departments, agencies, a fee. We don't have the authority not to exceed 2% of the administrative costs. So they would lose.
So for my education, what happened in 2011, $1.7 million increase. So what transpired between those two biannual?
I don't have any specific answers for you on that, other than it could have been bad fire years.
'07-'09 was 930, then 09-11, but it's just gone up.
That's getting into the biscuit fire era, isn't it? No, it's 02-03. I'm not sure. There could have been some bad fire seasons in there.
Well, mostly Forest Service. I mean, ODF probably participated.
But you can see, and looking from those years since 09, that those things have just been
astronomical.
Yes. The growth of those things have
doubled in some of those
years. Over that time frame, they're fourfold.
Well, 09 was 220, and 15 is 49. I mean, it's significant.
Yeah.
I was wondering how the justification for that increase is. What?
They would probably say the cost of fighting fire at the state level. So is the BLM and the Forest Service They don't always contract with ODF. I mean,
not Forest Service at all.
They're all BLM.
BLM does. The cost of the Medford District and the Road Forest Protection Association is to the tune of about $3.8 million.
To charge them?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they own, in Josephine County, BLM's got about 340,000 acres, so they've got 10 times as much as we do so far. Bill's $100,000. Theirs is a million.
Yeah.
But I would also say, if we're having to kick in the substantive amounts of money, what is our input as far as how those forests are maintained? And I mean, that's just another, would be another nail in our hammer patch to say, look, guys, we're paying more money than you can even imagine. We'd like to have some say-so how
we're
managing our forests managed.
So it's just, we're paying, you know, but the additional cost
sure.
is being, you know, distributed over everybody. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, if you're having bad fire years, those all those costs for those bad fire years are passed on to everybody.
Yeah, but it's those bad fire years, is that caused by mismanagement of the forest?
It certainly can contribute
yeah.
to
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know why, you know, they want to they want to manage them any way they want to do it without any kind of responsibility. Why in the heck should I pay for it? I need to pay for it. I'll have
well, we are. When our
yeah.
stuff gets burned up and we had to spend $1.5 million mm-hmm. for $1 million in reforestation and burned up half of our holdings that weren't even merchantable yet, yeah, we're taking it in the shorts. And then
sure.
We're
pay for it.
Paying for it.
Oh, yeah. That's ridiculous.
That's probably why Coos County's pushing back the way they are. I didn't see the bill. It didn't come to, I think it just came to forestry. And
Coos County really takes it in the shorts on this because you're talking about a fire district that has very low frequency of fires compared to Southwest Oregon.
Oh, absolutely.
So when they're passed off their percentage of that Salem bill, they're getting hit hard. Because
it's not proportional to how many fires. We have a ton of fires.
Yeah.
They don't hardly have any.
Yeah.
We can see that we have, you know, a need for fire protection. You're like,
yeah.
we're paying for this and we don't even have
you pay,
liability.
Yeah, you pay $130,000, $140,000 a year, and in a typical year, you go, man, we didn't have any fires. You know, we really didn't get much bang for our buck, but you have a fire where you lose 10% of your ground. Fighting something like that could cost you millions of dollars
mm-hmm.
overnight, and then one helicopter picked up off the ground. So,
yeah. yeah.
But it is something that's on my radar screen, and I'll be looking for ways to try and mitigate those charges out of Salem. And I sit on the Rogue Forest Protection Board now, so I do have a say in the budgets associated with the Rogue Forest Protection Association. But the Salem stuff, we need to get some better representation in terms of the protection districts on those costs.
That's nice. You're on those boards. This is the tongue-in-cheek. You're not intimidated by anybody being on those boards, are you?
I'm not intimidated by much of anybody.
Yeah, and the CFTLC, which is the County Forest Trust Lands Advisory Committee, is getting fractured. So the vice chair, which is Craig Pope out of Polk County, I think he's pulling out. Maybe he has resigned. I don't know if he's done that yet or is going to. Tim Josie of Tillamook County is the chair. And there's a little bit of that going on. So a lot of that going on, which is not good. And I haven't really gotten that involved, as we are 3% of the state's forest.
Yeah, but there, you know, it goes, what is the plan? I mean, if everybody's in agreement with what the plan is, and now
no,
we're going to implement
not.
The plan, and that's the problem. And that's
him
the problem.
Going over here, pulls
yeah.
out,
and that's the problem.
It's falling apart.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And we wonder why we get nailed and get taken advantage of.
And so, then
and
just.
We are only an advisory element to the Oregon Department of Forestry
right.
board. I don't think they even have a seat, the counties.
No.
Don't. Isn't that crazy?
That's
they're supposed to be a 50% beneficiary or something like that.
Yeah, those are all appointed positions by the governor on the Board of Forestry. One other point on this is Coos County had scheduled that roundtable.
Yeah, on May 17th.
Which is my budget presentation to the board that day at 4, so we're going to miss that.
Okay.
I just asked Lance to keep me posted on any developments from that end. Okay. And make sure we keep the lines of communication open with them.
Yeah, good. No, I appreciate
it. We should coordinate more with counties that manage forest trust lands, Coos, Douglas, Hood River. I think it would be good for us to get together once
certainly
a year.
Can't hurt. Yeah, Lance puts on a little get-together
he
over there.
He used to. He hasn't last year or something like that. That would be good. We need a new host. So maybe it was supposed to rotate, but he's done it like 3 times because it didn't ever rotate.
That's really off.
Nobody else did it. We might consider doing that.
Sure.
Hosting it, but holding it in Hood River.
Yeah.
That way everybody, and I know Lance will participate.
Okay.
Just a thought.
Anything else for me?
Probably Hood River no. turn anyway.
Yeah. Works for me.
Yeah. Right.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Our department quarter updates. We have Ms. Lisa.
Patience.
Yeah.
But this is a shorter agenda than most.
Probably shorter agenda. Did you guys get the update given to you this morning?
No.
Was it supposed to be distributed?
I thought you would, but that's okay.
Go ahead.
All right.
No, we're good.
So our workload for the third quarter, we did 827 clients in our office, about 150 outreach clients, which is really big.
Is that when you say outreach clients, that's when we're going out of the office here to visit somebody or to check on whatever.
Or so to go out to events where we, you know, have our services like out at events. So there was 150 last quarter, which is pretty big. Our outreach is growing tremendously.
What does it mean when you say 150?
We see 150 people. We actually help 150 people, like interact, answer questions, write claims, you know, enroll in veterans health care, education benefits, things of that nature, working with the spouses. We fielded over 1,000 phone calls, and our recoveries were over 540,000. So those recoveries were really big for last quarter, third quarter. Typically, they're going down quite a bit now because claims are being developed much quicker due to having online processing. So those are much quicker. So the service office, you wanted to know a little bit about the big picture. We're really stable internally, externally. We continue to work closely with our partners, our community partners, to create a seamless transition for veterans in all different areas, whether it's they're coming out of incarceration or if they need some type of housing or if they need care at the VHA. We try to make all those transitions fairly seamless, working with other community partners and having our hands in other what they are doing. Our outreach program is growing. However, our Wolf Creek outreach has been slowing down tremendously for the last several months. And so we've been kicking around the idea of possibly going to Murphy. I have Murphy clients. We're looking to do an outreach in Murphy in lieu of Wolf Creek, or maybe just add Murphy on a Thursday during our outreach week. And so the Vet Center is really interested in doing outreach, in coupling, doing outreach out there in Murphy. So if you guys know of any property out there that we can hang our hat in, I know that the sheriffs have a substation. I heard from Ryan this morning it wasn't actually our property.
It wasn't.
And so we don't necessarily have a place to go, so we're looking for a place to go out in Murphy area, possibly even the old Ray's parking lot, maybe out there somewhere. Something like that. Sure, out there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not here. Let's do it right.
Yeah.
Tell us the good news.
Yeah. Cheryl's barn.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we're kicking that idea around. It seems like a pretty good idea. I've been going to Wolf Creek since 2001, and I don't necessarily want to cut out that outreach. But if it's not cost effective, if I'm only seeing, continue to see one, maybe two, three veterans out there. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the community has been. A veteran is fairly stable out there, and we've already taken care of them since 2001.
Okay.
So we're thinking about that transition. We recently lost a new hire. We hired a...
Oh, I know a place out there that might work.
In Murphy?
Yeah, Ron Field. Field Home Center. They own that industrial yard.
Mm-hmm.
But they There is that office building right there in the corner on that campus, and I don't know what they use that for.
Huh. I'll call.
If you reach out to Ron Fields,
okay,
he would probably be a good person.
Thank you.
Bobby Copeland's got his yard, but they don't really have any offices. There's a mobile office thing out there. They don't have any facilities for it work.
Yeah.
You got to have something maybe that's a little ADA compatible.
I would want that, but that would, in an ideal situation, absolutely.
Well, what about Three Rivers? They've got their main administrative headquarters is in Brighton Murphy,
right?
And it's ADA, and they have, I'm sure they would set aside, like a conference room or something that would work.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm sure they would, but they should be asked.
That would probably be better than
Fields. Yeah. I could ask out there.
Yeah,
that would be a good one. Yeah,
I don't think of going over the river. That's
North Murphy,
right? So far away.
Yeah,
that's 100 feet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Where was I? So anyway, we hired an individual a few months ago, and he decided to leave as a employee, but he came back as a volunteer, which is fabulous for our program.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we have the VSO 1 slot open again, so we'll be hiring for part-time VSO here pretty quick after we get back from conference. We started a comprehensive weekly training in our office, which has proven to be very valuable in sorting off, in increasing productivity and accountability, and there's so much information that goes to that office that we all have to be on the same page. And so it's been a really good change down there for us, and really solidified us as a team. So it's really good.
Good.
ODBA, the Legislative Activity House Joint Resolution 202, is now forwarded to the November election. So that will be great. The bill basics will channel 1.5% of lottery dollars to veteran services, which equates to about $18 million. The question is where is the money going to go? And from what I hear, there's a lot of different entities that are lobbying for those funds. You think?
By the time 50% of the lottery money down back to the counties, where there's not going to be any money left because it'll all be dedicated out to these different organizations or whatever.
One change that has been recent, Polk County, which traditionally fell under OVDVA authority, has now established a county veteran service office, and that is going to affect our funding in a negative way, because now there's an extra county veteran service office receiving funds out of our funding stream. The good news is the veterans will benefit from that, so that's really great. I'm not really quite sure how that's all going to fall into place and how much actually that's going to affect us, but I will let you know. I'll keep you informed on that when it actually happens. And the next on the agenda is VMOP, our Veterans Music Outreach Program, which is... We continue to grow. So we have two groups now. We have the DD214s, which is our season group, which was established 5 years ago. We have had, 30 to 40 veterans come in and out of the group. Some have actually left the group and started their own groups, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We're having the ripple effect a little bit, but the standard core seems to stay intact, and that's about 10 to 12, 15 veterans. We meet twice a month, and they're more seasoned. And, they've been asked to do some venues outside, so...
Cool.
The hospital just contacted us to do a flag ceremony for them and, wineries and things of that nature. And so getting them out is a little tricky, but we're working on that, and we're working on playing other on just community venues, just for the food bank, things of that nature.
Sure.
And it's a lot of fun. The DD2...
They're always looking for somebody to play Soup for the Soul. I know that's been a really real challenge because they don't... They don't want to pay anybody because it's a fundraiser. Everybody donates everything. And what I've heard is that everybody who's been asked to play for a couple of hours, they've all wanted, you know,
money. Where is Soup for the Soul? Is that just like
usually the pub usually, Wild River Pub? They've kind of outgrown that space. Where do they do it?
Parkman Christian Center, I think.
Oh, did they do it?
Done last year. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Parkman Christian Center.
I thought they moved because, yeah, you're right. That was just so cramped. I mean, if you're not in line at 10 o'clock or whatever, you're not going to get any soup or have a place to sit down.
Okay.
Good.
Good. Thanks for that.
Absolutely.
Because it was really hard to bring in, it's really hard to kind of weave new players into a group that's already established. We established a 215s, and if you don't know what a DD215 is, a DD215 is actually an amendment to a DD214. And so we started the DD215. So, for example, if you get discharged in a citation or a medal isn't referenced on your DD214, you can actually contact the Department of Defense and they will issue you a DD215, which is an attachment to you or an amendment to your DD214 with that medal on it. And so we started the DD215s, and they're the basic group. We have a individual who comes and helps, you know, with with lessons and things of that nature, and so it's working out really well. We're able to get the new people that want to come into the group, funnel them through the DD215s, and if they're really accomplished, we can go ahead and just put them right up into the 214s. Mm-hmm. And there's different music sets and stuff, and so it's a lot of work. We're doing newsletters and things now, and so it's just kind of it's getting big. It's a lot of fun though.
Alex Applund is the contact at Soup for the Soul. You can get in touch with her by Applund Autobody.
Thank you. So our community events, I did a Korean War Veterans Benefit Outreach last month, and it was very well received. And there's a woman's veteran coordinator from ODBA, Elizabeth Estabrooks, who's coming down from ODBA next week. She's going to meet, I think, with Cheryl, I've been told. I thought she was going to meet with you, but I'm not quite sure how the scheduling worked out. Anyway.
You're on vacation for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You are?
No. You want?
So she'll be down next week, and she's got an outreach event out at RCC. And we just continue to do our SOVAR, Southern Oregon Veterans Area Roundtable. UCAN started JOCOVAR, which are Josephine Veteran Areas Roundtable, and we're slated already for February for our event at the fairgrounds, our stand-up event at the fairgrounds. They already booked the building.
Good.
So, yeah. So we're just moving right along.
Good.
Do you have any questions?
A lot of good, busy things.
A lot of good, busy things. Yeah. And I will shoot you guys each one of these if you'd like.
That'd be good. Okay.
I'll get a copy.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
If you did.
Have a great time.
Keep it a mile. Have a good sleep.
Yes, you too.
Yeah.
Arthur, I will leave with you though.
Wow.
You're welcome.
Well, good morning, Mr. O'Hare.
Good morning, good morning. Three brief items that I have this morning. So the grant accountant, that is a new position for the finance office. We're repurposing the accountant position in public health, moving it to finance, and we'll take over those responsibilities and supervise. So that has been posted, and We're leaving it out. It's posting for about 3 weeks, which is a little long, but we're trying to cast a wide net to get the appropriate person. So take care of that. The second thing is our audit contract. Back in 2013, we sent out a request for proposal to about 8 auditing firms. We got responses and bids from 3. Eisler has been the contractor, the vendor, the auditor for the last
off and on.
Right, for the last 2 years. But anyway, in the original RFP, we have an extension provision. So this is the year that we would activate that extension. It was an original 3-year contract, extension for another 3 years should we choose. So I'm bringing it before the board. Should you choose, then I will instruct the Eisler to prepare an engagement letter, which I will then bring back to the board for official. But I just wanted to bring that to your attention, make sure everybody's happy with
it. I know they've been here before.
Mm-hmm.
They're now under a contract for how many years?
Right. The original 2013 is up the 13, 14, 15 audits.
Hmm.
So 16, 17, and 18 would be the extension.
Okay.
And in order to do that, we would have them prepare an engagement letter, that I would bring before the board. But I, more or less in the process, I wanted to make sure that you folks were aware of that and were in agreement to move forward with that extension.
Is there a large corpus of firms that
we got three responses. We sent out to 8 firms, and we received responses from 3, which Eisler was one of the 3.
Mm-hmm.
One of them we disqualified because of their performance. And the third one, interestingly enough, the third one was the highest priced one. And so their cost was higher than the other two. So
they weren't
considering. Substantially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I have it. They were about $3,000 higher than the other one. So 10%.
So much of this, and I'm not trying to impugn anybody's reputation in this from outside. But I'll get a contract. But then in that contract is also, the figure is there, $50,000 is there. But then as they go through that process, then you eat up a bunch of overtime costs, extensions costs, that kind of stuff. And so you end up at $70,000. Where the other firm bid $65,000.
Oh, I see.
So you get discounted. Is that a...
No, these folks get paid exactly what they bid.
Okay.
They don't get more.
So there's no extension cost in this stuff.
There might be an escalation clause.
Right. The prices, and that's what we'll receive. The prices that they will quote for the extension will include a minimal, maybe 2-3% increase. But like I said, the interesting thing was that the high bidder from 3 years ago is that cost would equal about what they would be at for this coming 2016 for Eisler, for their normal increment. So they're not giving us a bad deal. They're giving us a really good deal.
Competitive market, because you have to perform. You just can't have good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to perform.
Yeah, it's pretty important.
They
could do 100 different audits, which they have a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
They get one where it doesn't go very well. That's not good.
Really, especially when it's our audit.
Well,
we've had good, very good success with Eisler.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they do several of the other local ones, Medford and so on. So they're very well capable, very very competent, very capable. When the extension is up, we will go out to bid. That's what we did. That was 2013. That was the original contract plus the extension. So that was up in 13, and we went out to bid, like I said, with 8 different firms to try to get a response. Even though we're on the I-5 corridor, we are a little bit out of the way for some of the more popular firms that operate in the northern part of the state. So like I said, we got responses from 3 out of the 8. Eisler being one. Okay. So that I will contact Eisler and have them submit something to us.
It'd be good.
And then just as a brief FYI information, I did get talking to Robert Keith at the fleet. They are moving forward on a budgeted purchase of a truck for the Parks Department. It's part of the 15-16 budget, was approved back when, but now they're just moving forward on that. So, for your information, that's what I've got.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Spend on.
We're all set for the May 17th budget meeting. You and I need to probably sit down with Steve Streeter, excuse me, and get that squared away.
For the presentation, yeah. We have two presentations, forestry and economic development, and then the budget committee will, of course, deliberate on whatever decisions they want to make for the budget. I have a draft motion. I have some informational pieces of paper that might help in clarifying what the decision points are. I'll get those out to them. I haven't sent out anything yet for the May 17th meeting, but I'll get those out probably mid next week.
Okay. Great.
Danka. Okay. Matters.
The only thing I have, sir, is that I have a meeting set up with ODOT Public Works, I think the city, on June 1st, and it's at 1 o'clock. I don't think I'm going to be back by 2, so I was wondering if we could move the executive session on June 1st to 3 to accommodate that. But what we're discussing, there was some federal transportation reauthorization, mm-hmm. I mentioned that, and so we might have some potential for some additional projects. We need to get, you know, an idea of what those need to look like and stuff to move forward, so having that conversation early and often would be good. That's it.
Okay. My only matter is an email from Nate Gowrie-Rand, Community Corrections, and he sends a comparison chart between 15 and 16 of fees collected, you know, supervision fees, and they're up every year, every month, with the exception of March, they were down, but they've been averaging a good increase of supervision fees.
Oh.
So that's good. I mean, yeah. You know, 'cause it holds them accountable to the person, yeah. And also provides the opportunity for the department to look good, and they do look good. So.
I forgot that the spring conference for AOC is coming up in June, June 12th, 13th, and 14th. It's up in Pendleton. I haven't decided if I want to go yet. Pretty sure I've decided I don't want to go. Whether or not I need to go or not, I have not decided. So, are you considering?
No.
Okay.
I'm going to go on vacation that week.
So you were. You're not going to stick around a bit on that sale? Part of me wants to stick around for the 14th property.
That'll be interesting. Well, sure, that'd be nice. But I would.
The ship should be ready to sail.
Yeah.
Pretty much by next week's weekly business session.
Well, to me, the nice thing about this is let the whole process go out to bid, and there aren't any bids received. Okay, now we've got the structure set up to where they can now be marketed individually or independently. So,
that's
a great opportunity. So. Okay.
Okay.
That's it.
Sir.
Nothing else. It is 9:58, and this meeting is done.